and glory. Hallelujah.
That's Mac Rebenack. I bet you don't know who Mac Rebenack is, but you know that voice. Very, very close friends of his, like me. We call him Dr. John. You also heard Mavis Staples and the Dirty Dozen Jazz Band with Lay My Burden Down. Done New Orleans style, of course. It's from Dr. John's 2004 album, Nolans, Dis, Dat, or Dudder. Oh, I love this song. And I do love the New York, New Orleans style music. I really do. I really like it. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And it's Free Your Mind Friday. It's our open forum, our regular weekly open forum, where you decide what it is you want to talk about. And you proceed talking about what it is you want to talk about. We ask only that you, you know, recognize there's a whole bunch of other people and just put it as concisely as you can and be prepared. People may be asking questions or they may be taking you on, whatever it is. You're up to it, I'm sure. At 888-874-4888. We've been talking about the week's worth of craziness from Washington, D.C., more specifically from Donald Trump. And I guess that may figure into your discussion today as well. But, of course, anything you wish to talk about, it's acceptable. We'll be listening to what you have to say, what you have to offer. But we spend the whole week practically talking about the period that we're in, and asking questions about what does this situation that we're in tell us that we have to do. Personally, a long time ago, I just came to the conclusion that the political situation is just not doing much for me. And I had no desire to be part of it because it was so futile, in my view. Much of it a waste of time, engaging people in, you know, making themselves busy, but not necessarily in putting people's energies toward productive action, and certainly not really a way of getting people involved in this thing called democracy. That wasn't the intention. It was in the end, I could only think of it as a way of just getting people distracted and involved in things that are not putting us as a community of people any closer to the concept of shared shared power, shared a sharing in the process of promoting democracy and bringing the society together. That was just not happening. It was just a very sad and cynical joke. So I absented myself from that and decided that, you know, I'll probably be a bit better off if I do within my means and my abilities those things that I can do and not get involved in the party process. The party process, in my view, even then, was a waste of time. And it was not at all, not even close to what I thought would be the whole point of democratic rule. So since then, I've been doing other things and being very careful to stay away from the party process. It meant nothing to me. And oddly, as I've shared with you before, this came to me when I was in a voting booth, about to cast my vote. And then I realized, you know, this is a mugging. I'm being mugged. This is a stick-up. And nothing that's on the ballot that I'm supposed to vote yes or no about is relevant to me and people generally. It's relevant to vested interests, people who get contracts and people who get a lot of money. And it is made to look like it all was legal because, after all, people voted for it. Not that they knew that they were voting for it. But I vowed that very day, almost, I think almost 20 years now, I was just not going to be part of that. I would like to be, it's not, I don't want to vote. I would love to be able to vote. I look forward to it. But this carnival that is repeated over and over again makes no sense to me at all. And just the same, I have always been on the lookout for something that could make me feel that I'm really contributing to a collective effort moving forward with a plan and with some degree of integrity. And, you know, it hasn't happened yet. I haven't given up hope, but until I see some signs of it happening, I'm out. I'm not part of the political party process. But let's hear what you have to say at 888-874-4888. What's been on your mind? Let's know. Let's start in New York with Ali. Hello, Ali. You're on the air.
Yes, Professor. How are you doing?
How are you? I missed you a couple of weeks. How is it going for you?
Very good. And I just wanted to say something about one of your students, Jose. He said that he's not looking forward to the date of graduation. I never wanted to graduate. I just want to let him know.
Well, you know, yes. I actually used to have graduations. When I was running my journalism training program, which was a very unorthodox program, of course we're going to have a graduation ceremony. It's going to be different, but we're going to have one. And it was really very moving, actually, to see people step up and receive their little piece of paper, but representing real serious dedication to the work. And, I mean, we really had a very, very tough program. So I made it a point that we would have a graduation.
Yes, but I bet a lot of people are still in touch with you. That's what I think. I'm pretty sure that they're still in touch with you. Yeah, I just wanted to say hello to all those listeners. And today I wanted to talk about this executive order.
Okay.
And the executive order that he banned the seven countries. And I just had to bring back to somebody sent me a YouTube video, not a whole interview, about from Jorge Ramos interviewing this man called Jared Taylor, Jorge Ramos is, he works for Univision, and he was that he was that man that Trump degraded. Mm-hmm. And he asked him a question about the immigrants, this 11 million people that are in the country. And Trump didn't want to answer him. And he's a news reporter for Univision. And he was interviewing this man, Jared Taylor. This man, Jared Taylor, the way that he was talking to Ramos was very degrading in a way. And it's funny because Jorge Ramos looks a little bit, they look alike, like Anderson Cooper. So you know.
Yes, he does, Mexican. Actually.
Yeah, so he's Mexican, but he's a white Mexican. But mm-hmm. when he talks about Mexico and his people, he includes himself, okay? So when he was interviewing this man, one thing that I noticed about this man right away is that he wanted to talk down to him. And he was mentioning about one of the big questions for him was, and this man didn't like it, what are you going to do with these 11 million people that they are here? And because he said, we deserve to be here just like you. This man, Taylor, was telling him, this country was made for white people and white people only. So the reason that I mentioned this, mentioning about this ban is because if you take a look at what is happening right now with the white supremacy, how they think that this country belongs to white people only, is because they know that 2030 or 2040, this country going to change completely. And between Trump and the Republican and the Democrats, too, they wanted to do anything by any means necessary to get rid of us. What surprised me the most about this ban is that people with green card residents are even included on this ban, which is very surprising. You see, one thing, they could send all of us to our country, especially people they even descend in the first generation. But what are they going to do with the African Americans that they know? So they have created these jails to make sure that they keep us in our country because they don't have a place to send the African American. I guess they have these jails, these private jails, because when they deport all these so-called, what they call illegal immigrants, these private jails, they're going to be available to put more people in there. Because the way that this man Taylor was talking, he even told him, I don't want no chicken to be running in my backyard. Like to have chicken is a bad thing in his wide world, running around his yard, his backyard. So this is the way I see it. And another thing is, I even include Bill Clinton, because Bill Clinton was one of those who created this problem with the mass incarceration and more jails. He opened more jails, the construction of more jails, to put people in those jails. So eventually, I think they're going to ban more country. They're going to make sure that we don't call them, because he was very offended when Ramos called him that they're going to be the new minority. And they don't want to use that word to them. They feel degraded. They degrade us with the word. But when we use it against them, that is a big problem. So I think everything is connected. Yeah, they're banning these 7 countries. But eventually, they're going to take care of all of us. And as a matter of fact, there is a new form that when you come into the country from other country, and I'm not talking about this country that they've been banned, for any other country, they want you to sign this form that a lot of Latinos are telling people on TV not to sign, because what you're signing is that you're telling them that you don't want to be a legal immigrant. You don't want a green card no more. So therefore, they could send you back to your country.
Well, so you know, we're getting close to, you mentioned the connecting dots, and it also has to do with reorganizing our society, our notion of culture, but certainly about the the power of the state over the power of the individual. And a lot of things are happening all at the same time. They may look disconnected, but they're not. And you're right about that. But it won't be long before we see how the dots are connected. There is great paranoia, and you can't separate this. The whole idea of whites coming to terms or terrified of coming to terms with the idea that they soon will be officially a minority in the United States. The fallout is already being experienced. All of these draconian laws and these very strong measures being taken to control people's actions and control people's lives, it's all part of an anticipation of what it is that life will be like in just another 10, 15 years. For the so-called white majority now becoming a white minority just around the corner. Psychologically, they're not ready for that transition. And even now, there's this rush to put into place to restructure the power equation so that they never are going to be a minority in the way we understand it, the way we have experienced it. There's a lot of that going on, and it's also global. Britain has already begun to experience that. And it is going to make, it has already begun making the shift. Paris, France, is already going through that with people from its former colonies who have not been able to benefit from colonialism. And, of course, they're looking to change their lives. They're going back to the so-called mother countries. Britain, France, Germany, all these major European countries are witnessing in our time the inevitability of the actions they took in the 30s and 40s and 20s. When people are depleted of their own resources in their own land, they'll come pay a visit to the homeland. They'll come to Britain. They'll come to Germany. They'll come to France. They'll go to Spain. Right now, Spain is doing one heck of a lot of damage because it really wants to seal off its borders. It's happening all over the world. It's a global phenomenon, and it's a direct result of imperialism and colonialism and the continuation of fleecing their former colonies of all of their resources. Imagine a country like Guyana, all right, which is within the Amazon basin, very fertile, actually importing rice. It never did that before. But now it has to import rice. The Haitians are forced, who always were able to feed themselves. Bill Clinton, his brother in Arkansas, has the rice concession. Bill Clinton himself admitted that he destroyed the agricultural sector of Haiti, which was small farming. And now they have to import rice. They destroyed the agricultural sector. They have to come abroad, go wherever they can to survive. That's a number one imperative. So we are seeing just the beginning of it. As awful as it is, it's just the beginning. And the more scared these imperialist countries are about a whole bunch of things, not being just overpowered physically, but overpowered genetically. That is a huge part of the fear. You know, that's what is happening in Paris. They are terrified. The right wing is so terrified about it. that it has actually spilled over to the general population. If you have all these Africans coming into France and you have intermarriage, they already are saying, we are done for. This is the end of our genetic, a pure genetic line. In Germany, it's the same argument. So we are in for quite an exciting time ahead. And that's why I continue to hammer home the point, we better get serious about planning workable alternatives, because whether we like it or not, it's these things are coming at us. So we better be prepared. Thanks for getting us started today, Ali. Really good to hear your voice. Let's go to Ariel from Michigan. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
I want to thank you for your commentary.
You have
said some things that I have been saying for years about how insane these people are, and it's like right on. And it's so sad. It's so sad. But one of the things is now they're going to get to know how it feels when they don't have pure bloods anymore. Look what they did to the Native Americans. There's not too many pure blood Native Americans anymore, as far as I understand it, and things like that. So it's like, yeah, now they're going to know how it feels. I feel so sorry for these poor, scared, coward bullies who they just can't control their own lives, so they have to control everybody else's. But the main reason why I called was to say that I didn't vote for many years, and I get these letters in the mail shaming me into voting, and I'm wondering if anyone else had anything like that where it said, well, you haven't voted in so long, and then it's a matter of public record, and they were like these shame letters, and I got a few of them. They might be in my shredder now, but I never saw such a thing in my life, so I thought, well, okay, keep them quiet, but I'm going to vote my conscience. I'm not going to vote for who they think I'm going to vote for, because it's none of their business. And now they're trying to shame people into voting.
But what do you think is the significance of that, though?
Oh, it's a good question. And I'm not really sure how to answer you, honestly. But that's a very good question.
You should think about that.
Yes,
because there is a reason that you're getting these letters.
Mm-hmm.
But you ought to think it through.
They're afraid that I'm not going to vote for them. That's the only thing I can think of. Am I close?
Do you know of other people who have gotten similar letters?
No. I'd like to find that out. So maybe if anybody in the listening audience can share if they had an experience like that or if they know anybody like that.
Well, hold on for a minute. I think we see another Michigander here. Leona, you're on the air. You're on the air with Ariel from Michigan as well.
Ariel, how are you, Therese, and to the PRN audience?
Thank you.
I didn't hear all that Ariel was saying, but I called in for something else. So if there's something you want me to address that Ariel said, what is it?
Forgive me. Go ahead, Ariel.
I'm up here in the UP, and I haven't voted in a few years. And I received some letters from, I think it was might have been a Democrat, but who I have since have ashamed to be a part of.
Can you speak up a little bit? Sorry, kid.
Okay. I got these letters in the mail after not voting for a few years. And they were shame letters. They were telling me that I'm supposed to vote and that we noticed that you haven't voted in a while, and they put on. I wish I had the letter in front of me. It was very. Oh, what's the word when you want? Well, shame, but like goading and saying, "Well, you didn't vote," you know, and trying to make you feel bad about it.
So I was questioning. I was asking Ariel what she thought the significance of that was, with the idea that she is suddenly getting these letters, basically shaming her, as she put it, for not voting in several years. What do you think? Are you getting these kinds of letters to Leona? And what do you think is the reason for this, other than the obvious that, well, we want to encourage you to vote? Is there something else happening here, you think?
I think it's possible, yeah. The Democratic Party may well be imploding, especially in Michigan, and more power to it, because it's just as corrupt as the Republicans in some respects, and this is just my opinion. And and I think you're right. It's a shaming tactic, probably, and maybe they got somebody new working on the database, and they're digging up old numbers or got some new campaign going to try to pull in more people, raise more money. I'm only guessing. I really don't know. I really don't know. But I hear it's beautiful.
Well, let me just put an idea out there. I don't know what area of Michigan you live in, Ariel. But immediately it brought to my mind, the possibility that there is a racial angle here, too. Not all people, I suspect, would get a shaming letter like this. Because it would be expected that in some areas of Michigan or any place else, but there is a geographic marker where people, if it is spotted, and you're being monitored, by the way, so that if a party sees that it may lose a lot of support in one area, they work on converting those people who haven't voted in a while to become more active, to counterbalance as Michigan is changing culturally and it's changing racially, to work on shoring up the numbers in certain areas, and they probably wouldn't care too much in other areas if people don't vote. So it's probably an interesting pattern to look at.
Well, thank you very much. You gave me a lot to think about, and I've been doing a lot of thinking because I've been a loyal listener to PRN for about a month now.
And good for you.
Or suspected a lot of what I've been hearing, and now I'm just getting the gory details. And thank you for thank everybody over there, PRN, Gary Noll, and you, and everybody for being brave enough to bring the truth out.
Thank you so much, and I'm so glad you're with us. Thank you. Leona, let's continue with you.
Bye. Okay. I'm glad to be on the line, but when I heard you mention genetics, I thought about the Honorable Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, may she rest in power, and her theory that has yet to be refuted, her theory about the origins and the psychological underpinnings of the system of white supremacy. And I would like to just read her functional definition of racism, white supremacy, quickly. She says, as a black behavioral scientist and practicing general and child psychiatrist, my current functional definition of racism, white supremacy is as follows. The local and global power system, structured and maintained by persons who classify themselves as white, whether consciously or subconsciously determined. This system consists of patterns of perception, logic, symbol formation, thought, speech, action, and emotional response as conducted simultaneously in all areas of people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. The ultimate purpose of the system is to prevent white genetic annihilation on Earth, a planet in which the overwhelming majority of people are classified as non-white, black, brown, red, yellow, by white-skinned people. All of the non-white people are genetically dominant in terms of skin coloration compared to the genetically recessive white-skinned people. This is from her book in 1991 called The ISIS Papers, The Keys to the Colors, in the foreword to that book.
Now, what you previously had listened to just on this program, why did it trigger this particular passage from Frances Cress Welsing?
Because of your earlier comment, or what I thought I heard you say about the folks in Europe, Spain, whatever, they're fearing genetic. You didn't say annihilation, but you know.
But that's it, actually. That's exactly it.
Well, that's why I called it to mind. And Dr. Francis Kress Welsing was the only psychiatrist in the United States, probably the world, who for 40 years studied and talked about and tried to help people heal from the effects of racism, white supremacy on their psyche.
Well, this is a point that I continue to make about us really understanding the systems, and there are many, and they're overlapping, the systems we are dealing with.
Yes,
we see things in a one-dimensionally because that's the way we're taught. we're not taught to think in a broad sense. We see things, well, this is what's happening over here, so therefore that's the story. No, you see everything, or you try to connect everything, so you have a panoramic view. So a thing that looks simplistic or very one-dimensional is actually a very deep thing.
Yeah.
What is happening now is exactly that. The philosophy of Trump, never mind all these executive orders and so forth, it's what is the thinking that undergirds his action. And you see how people around him mirror that mentality perfectly. They subscribe to it, even if it's hurting them. I talked about Nikki Haley earlier this week, the governor or former governor of South Carolina, who is now the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. You know, level-headed, not in the political sense, she wasn't so outside the fence, as it were. She was well within the boundaries of her political party and general mainstream politics. Within 1 week, now she is the daughter of Pakistani immigrants, okay, governor
mm-hmm.
of
yes.
South Carolina.
Yes.
Within a week, I swear to you, go look it up. Within a week of being appointed, she didn't even officially get into the groove just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But within a week, what did she say? She says to the world community of nations, you better back us up in terms of the votes that are taken at the UN. You better back mm-hmm. us up because we're taking names.
mm-hmm.
You understand that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the language.
Mm-hmm.
This is an Indian woman.
Yes, ma'am.
Born first generation.
Who thinks she's white?
United States.
Perhaps she's white. I don't know. But you know, white people, the system of white supremacy can redefine whiteness at the drop of a dime, you know, whenever they're ready.
Precisely my point.
Yeah.
So she serves.
Ready.
When we see a Nikki Haley, based on what we, that one little threat there,
mm-hmm.
she went a full tilt in 1 week.
Yes, ma'am.
So,
but then I think it goes without saying, well, maybe not, that, you know, had she not been capable and willing to act like that, she wouldn't hold that position, don't you think?
Exactly. So my sense is that she self-transmuted, she changed, she deracinated herself
mm-hmm.
in 1 week. That's all it took in 1 week to speak like Trump, to talk like Trump, to act like Trump. In other words, to fully make herself available and as an agent of white supremacy on a global level.
Yes, ma'am.
In 1 week.
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
so
ma'am.
This is a
yes.
kind of fear. It's actually the flip side of a fear that other people, the victims of this fear, take on the task. They take on the task of it. But we know this. But such is the power of a system that grooms everybody.
Yes, ma'am. And they have a very serious reason. Yes, ma'am, because they're trying to survive genetically. That's serious business with them. It's very, very serious business with them. We don't get it. Because Dr. Francis Krauss Wilson used the analogy of it's like a one-eyed man who resents a two-eyed man. The two-eyed man has no clue why the one-eyed man is so pissed off. But he's pissed off because he only got one eye. And you got two. And oversimplifying it, we got color, and they don't. And they're pissed. But let me say this. Let me ask you this. Have you ever considered having Neely Fuller on your show, Beatrice?
I haven't been in touch with Neely Fuller since I left New York, actually. Okay. That's quite a while ago. But yes, I have been in touch with one of his students, Harry Allen.
Okay. I don't know who that is. But he's
a writer.
Now.
And in fact, I gave him his first writing assignment. And he's quite excellent, a very excellent writer.
Okay. Okay. Harry Allen, you say?
Allen, yes. A-L-L-E-N.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. But I was just going to say that Mr. Fuller is still around, thank God. So I just thought I'd ask. Just thought I'd ask whether or not you had ever had him on or would consider having him on, what have you. Because he was a mentor for Dr. Francis Krauss Wilson
back in the day.
Yes, I know. Okay.
Harry Allen, a young man still, was well known in the world of hip-hop. He is considered actually an expert in that area because he wrote so frequently about it and had personal access to all of the leaders of the movement. And I haven't talked with him in a while, so maybe I should reconnect. So thanks today for calling in and giving us another perspective on this whole idea of supremacy. Thank you. We have, who else I see here? Clara from Philly. You're on the air. Is Clara there? I don't hear you. Okay. Frank from Philly, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Beatrice. It's good to speak with you. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours as well.
Thank you. You always stress clarity, and I really do appreciate it. Your voice also, I have to say, is clear. I don't hear so well. You know, I have a slight deficiency. But even if I'm across the room from the speaker, I can hear every syllable you speak, and I just really love it. You know, I wanted to tell you that. They have a clear, ringing voice that wants to be heard and really take seriously every word that you speak. You have a great respect for language, and it's integrity. This is how it reads to me. But also,
thank you.
I want to thank you because the show itself deals with concepts. So there's a common language for people that we don't get tripped up. You know, we can talk about things because we can relate issues to a concept, and that's what you always stress, and that's really appreciated. I loved the show yesterday. I particularly loved what Lincoln from Mount Vernon had to say, and also in the follow-up to him, David. You know, Lincoln first introduced, now you always talk about systems, and then Lincoln mentioned a phrase, system analysis, and I thought that was great because I think that is something that is really worthwhile, something to focus on, and something that I hope that you and your callers will continue to do, you know. And, of course, after that, David also used the phrase. So I think it's a great one, you know. And let's see here. You know, and we won't get caught up in the drama of the moment if we are thinking in terms of concepts, because we'll be able to think more clearly if we can take an event and apply it to the bigger abstract idea of what's going on, you know. And I think that's really helpful to us, and I think that's what's missing, because when Lincoln talked yesterday, he said how complex and intricate things are. Like he talked about the Women's March and said that it was, you know, it was chaos. It was craziness and probably funded by people who want to cause chaos. But, and I also thought too, and I think somebody else might have mentioned it in a previous show, that the timing was so poor, because when you think of somebody like Linda Sansour, who was one of the mobilizers, to me, okay, there was, in 2014, the attack on Gaza was a horrible thing, and people wrote about it. And there were some protests, you know, various parts, even one here in Philadelphia that I participated in. But what I'm saying is, the way they could mobilize all these women to do this big march because of Trump, if they had done that in 2014, that would have made a devastating impact on the slaughter that was going on in Palestine, you know. And the same way that when Sandra, you know, you had mentioned women of color were very active and mobilizing in this movement. And what I thought of, the most outrageous and egregious thing, like I knew many black people have been murdered by law enforcement in this country. And I mean, on camera, choked to death. But what struck me about Sandra Bland was a perfectly normal, healthy, psychologically healthy person is found hanging in a jail cell, just being there for 3 days. And this person had no reason for killing herself. To me, that is something that if they had mobilized all the women in the country, women of color and everybody, and really said, we are going to get to the bottom of this. We are not going to accept this, you know, regardless of what the family wants to do. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So am I still connected? Good. Okay. So that's basically what I wanted to say. I mean, there's a lot of other things that I could talk about, but I don't want to hog any more time. But I do appreciate you letting me speak. And I have to just say again how much I really love your show.
Okay? Thank you. You know, the whole point of this program is to get people used to the idea of expressing their views. And they have to be given space to do so. And this is, to me, the most important service that we could provide, which is a cross-pollination of ideas. You don't have to be in fear to express what you think. There's no right, there's no wrong. It's just what you're thinking. And there may be people with a different point of view. What would happen if we had a way of bringing those two people together and both begin to rethink their position, whether to strengthen their view or to influence the views of others? But it can't happen if we don't have a means of talking to each other. So I take that very seriously. It's important for people to express their views and to be given the space and time to do so.
And in my personal life, I don't have that. You know, I really don't have people that I can have a sensible conversation with, you know, with that conceptual, hierarchy in mind, you know, how it breaks down and everything, how something applies to an issue. It just doesn't seem people can converse in that way. That, again, is why I appreciate your show so much. When you say at the end of the show on Friday, and please surround yourself with people who add a positive dimension to your life, to me, you know, people do, but I want people who add a positive dimension to my life that, in the sense that there's a light on upstairs, you know, and they're thinking. That's what I really love. That's what I love. I mean, it's all well and good that people might like me, but I want to like them because, like I said, the light's turned on upstairs, you know, and rather than reacting, you know.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for adding to the collective today, and hopefully we'll have you on more regularly, and you would be able to pass the word on. Thanks so much for calling in. Great to hear from you.
You're very welcome.
Chris from Lawrence. What does Lawrence, New York, have to say?
How are you today, Eutrice?
Hello.
Hi, and hello to the CLN listeners and staff.
Thank you. In their behalf.
I wanted to, it's been on my mind since the march, and I have to agree, well, maybe, I don't know if I'm going to say the exact same thing, but something in keeping with your last caller's statement about the Women's March.
Yes.
And, you know, in light of what's been happening in the country, and before we get to, you know, the police, the problems we have with the police in this country, I mean, it seemed like a very large-scale event. I mean, a lot of energy had to go into that, but it went into it after the fact, and it almost looks intentional. Even if it wasn't, it looks ill-planned or ill-imagined. That sort of defense for, I don't know, was it a defense for democracy? Was it a defense for women's rights? Like, what exactly were they marching for? Was it health care?
Well, it was everything. They saw it as a kind of universal attack on critical issues, particularly affecting women and families. Now, one thing I should caution.
Mm-hmm.
We it's been a while since we saw a women's march for any reason. Perhaps the largest march we saw before this relating to women and the issues of women and families probably was the suffragette march. That's way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I admired and respected the march, even though I was very clear that there were many women there who were just, you know, they were just there. They didn't have a particular interest in advancing causes and so forth. They were there because they were high-profile people and they made speeches. This is going to happen all the time. People utilizing a moment where thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of people are gathered, and they suddenly pop up, and it's because they want to draw attention to themselves. But I looked at it in a longer range way, that this march was meant also to ignite action. And in that regard, I think it was very successful to ignite action and to cause people to take a look at the relationship between the power that they have, which we're not encouraged to believe we have, and to look at that in terms of the awesome task of facing down organized governments bent on taking away those rights. So if it planted the seed that we should move in the direction of affirming our power, I thought it was a spectacular success.
Now,
I'm not going I don't want to rate or be goaded into rating the march, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, was it a 10? The idea was impressive. It achieved certain tactical objectives. And in the long run, I think it laid the groundwork for a resurgence of political organizing efforts among women, wherever they are.
Well, I hope so. I hope that it does. I hope that you're right. I disagree with you on it.
Okay,
you know,
I accept.
From a distance, I'm going to tell you, it sounded like it was definitely about women's rights. And I don't. If it was about women, because I guess my beef is, it seemed like it was about white women. It didn't seem like the extra, you know, women of color now, because, you know, we have to say women of color and LGBTQ, you know, because woman of color is just not enough, or black woman is no longer enough. As soon as our issues come up, we have to soften it with every single thing else that's going on. But anyone else gets to call themselves the most vulnerable, the most oppressed, or they get to be set as a priority in these scenarios, and I saw that here in this march. I saw our plight, well, not our, I saw the plight of black Americans in this country softened with this blending in, this, you know, what looked like some quote-unquote rainbow coalition of people marching in the street. You know, we definitely get lost in scenarios like this time and time again. from money that's spent from education, from how business loans are given out. I see us get washed up in this minority as if we didn't have a very specific experience here in America. Something that, excuse me, but the Latino community didn't go through here, the Jewish community didn't go through here, and there are people in those communities that support the greater good in this country, but it's not the majority of them here in Israel, in Puerto Rico, in the Dominican Republic. And I see this march wasn't, it was more like a white woman having an argument with her husband in a restaurant, and we're all in the restaurant like, oh, look, they're fighting over there. Look at those rich people unhappy with each other. They have everything in the world, Mercedes parked outside, big house, big income, and look, they're over there arguing. That's what it looked like to me about
abortion. Now, I can't disagree at all with what you're saying. This, I have criticized women's movements for precisely this point. I've likened it to the woman
of color, for the black woman, for the Latino woman, for the Pakistani Indian, for all those who got involved, that's good. That's good that they did that. It's just when black men in America are shot down and imprisoned, you know.
But here, let's be fair.
It's almost like, and again, it's not that I don't necessarily advocate marching. I believe in banking and businesses, but like,
I get your point. I have had this criticism of many popular movements myself. I've said time and again, you know, the constant approach is, we'll do the heavy thinking, you just do the heavy lifting. We have to put an end to that. But still, even with that criticism,
yeah,
and it is real, I am not suggesting at all that you're wrong to make that observation. It's very real. But it also, we have to take into consideration that this march was planned literally, and not necessarily just as an anti-Trump march, but it was meant to signal, or to be a calling out of all this latent power that we haven't amassed. We just haven't done so. So while I recognize the legitimacy of your position, because I share it, it's been a constant criticism I have of many popular movements, especially headed by women. It has just about turned out every time to be a situation where they are controlling things and everybody else just needs to fall in line. But I think this march in that respect signaled a new turn, even in that, on that level.
Can I make one suggestion?
Sure.
Well, when we leave the marches, or when people leave marches, like, let's say the next day, right? Maybe in a more practical note, a Spanish person, a Latino person could go eat food at a Jamaican restaurant, and a Jamaican could stop by a Spanish restaurant, and maybe someone from an Indian restaurant can go to a Spanish restaurant, a Latino restaurant. Maybe we could just kind of see each other as opposed to being, in my opinion, somewhat.
Well, this was what was so different.
Borderline
repulsed
at times. Could we step into each other's area a little bit, say hi, have lunch, and maybe that would, you know, that way we're not just seeing each other at a march. We could start seeing each other every day.
If you listen to some of the speeches by the organizers, who happened to be a Mexican woman,
yes,
a Palestinian woman, and an African American woman.
Yes.
Those were the people who literally organized things. They were mostly the ones doing that work. Each of them has been doing work in their respective communities and crossing over into other communities for more than 20 years. These are not newcomers.
No. I mean the rest of us. I mean, we've always had some sort of conscious community in this country who is comfortable, you know, breaking barriers and commingling. But again, in my
experience, I haven't seen many Pakistanis
marry outside of their own. I haven't, you know, I don't know what the numbers are for Latinos. I'm sure it's a lot better. But I'm just saying, I get the big organizing and the marching, but I'm just saying in everyday life.
But that's our job. You see, this is the point I'm trying to make.
Yes,
that
I'm
is not the
us,
organizer's
not
job. The organizer's job, they did their job. And we have to defend them because they did a spectacular job. We are the ones standing on the sidelines, observing what went right and what went wrong and what didn't happen at all and all these things. But one thing is clear, we have not mobilized a person. We have not mobilized our neighbors, our neighborhoods. We haven't done that. That's our job. We cannot expect people to...
And I think that's more what I'm trying to get us to do outside of these big events. I'm saying sustaining that, we have to walk into each other's places and engage each other, not just around like a leader of some kind. Like we shouldn't need a leader to get us to say hi to each other. I'm saying that we, not them, we, outside of these marches, we have to hold our own people responsible for going out and saying hello. I mean, just hello. I mean, you spent time in New York. Am I off on this, the way the communities are separated? Like, this is not a melting pot. It's like seven different kitchens.
Well, you're right in that. But if anything, I hope your call helps to reinforce the point that people, they may not have been perfect at it, but they are as perfect as one could be in organizing a march of this, this magnitude.
They're trying, and I give those, especially those women of color who are making those attempts, it's good work when it's done. I'm just saying for the rest of us outside of the march, I'm saying we have to give our everyday lives just as much credit and hold ourselves just
exactly.
as responsible. That's what I'm saying. We should.
Then
we have to
I agree with you on that. Absolutely. We've come to the end of the program today. We should do about 5 more hours of this, and then we would have solved the bulk of our problems in the United States. But thank you so much for participating today and sharing your ideas. And I just wish that we could listen to each other the way we do on this program as a matter of just as a matter of norm, you know, that this is how we operate in our lives. It is the weekend, a chance to do just that, to surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life and to very much avoid people who don't. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus, and you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Have a really pleasant weekend. And, as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.
Glory, glory. Hallelujah. Since I laid them down.